So the last couple of weeks with me, we've been looking at this concept of safety. It's an interesting bugaboo to work with. What does safety mean when we know ultimately we are in impermanent bodies that are born, get sick, age, have problems and die, that is a given. So how do we reckon with the necessary nourishment of knowing safety in light of imperfect world? So this came up to talk about in this way because I've been studying with a woman named Amanda Blake. Online program that I really appreciate in the field of somatics. And if you're on the community email, I sent out a YouTube of her talking about her work in this field. And in this field, they talk about three necessary nutrients for our nervous systems to function at their healthiest. And the three are safety, connection, and respect. The first week that I brought this up, the piece of safety brought up interesting questions. And so we've been looking at it from a number of different angles since. And last week, looked at this idea of what is a reliable, trustworthy haven of safety, refuge, reliable refuge of safety in a world where we can't guarantee conditions being the way we want them to be. Last week, we looked at it primarily through a spiritual lens. And when looked at through that level, there is remarkable inspiration readily available everywhere you look in the world. Just to name one of the examples I pulled up, just to consider the profound depth of inner safety, someone like Nelson Mandela must have had in order to navigate the ferociously unsafe conditions of prison under apartheid. And to come out of that with this really strong sense of wise compassion that allowed him to lead a nation in a radical process of reconciliation. So, when we shared last week, this comes up again and again and again, and of course it does. Our amygdalas are wired for safety means I am going to have no harm come at me in any sort of way whatsoever. So what exactly are we talking about when we can't guarantee that? And this distinction between safe conditions and safety that is independent of conditions. We really looked at kind of that distinction. And I feel like I may have glided past a piece that I didn't want to. So I want to touch this for just a moment. Just because what we're looking at with the idea of safety here, is really, what is the safety that is beyond conditions being the way I want them to be? Because we can't control that. They are the way they are. That's the kind we're focusing on. Not so much, may I have a strong roof that doesn't fall on my bed in the middle of the night. Yes, we are looking at this first kind, but that doesn't mean we bypass the other. If we're talking about the safe haven that is reliable beyond conditions, It doesn't mean we blow off all the others. So I just wanted to make sure I said that very clearly. Of course, in our wisdom, we do everything we can to make sure we are taking care of conditions that we have control over. That's just wise. That's just wisdom. And there is a safety that transcends that. So that's all I want to say. Except for one little story from Sharon Salzberg, that this same question came up with kindness. And I think she gave this beautiful story of when we bring up these ideals, it doesn't mean we'd be stupid in the world. So she was in India on, and if you don't know Sharon Salzberg, she's a beautiful mindfulness teacher who, in the Buddhist tradition primarily, who focuses a huge amount of attention on the loving kindness aspect of mindfulness. So she was in India. She was doing this retreat on metta. That's the Pali word for loving kindness. And it was all about, cultivating this field of kindness and compassion for self, for others, for all beings everywhere. And one day in the retreat, she and a friend went out into the town. They were on a bicycle rickshaw, and some guy jumped, like literally, onto the rickshaw and tried to steal their purses. And she had this kind of like crisis moment of, oh my gosh, how do I be kind in this situation? And fortunately, the bicycle rickshaw driver had no qualms about that, and did what he could do to like push the guy off and bike away as fast as he could, and he got them to safety. So she went back and she told her teacher, "I just didn't know what to do. How do I be kind? I wasn't sure what's kindness." And he looked at her and said, "Sharon, there is no problem. With all the kindness and compassion in your heart that you can bring, you get your umbrella and you hit them in the head." So when we talk about these ideals, we don't mean to forget real world taking care. It's never meant to be that. What conditions we can take care of, we do that. And then we're always working with conditions beyond our control. And that's what we're looking at right now. So, a couple more thoughts on this idea of safety. And then I want us to do a short practice. So, neuroscience perspective today, and not just neuroscience, I would say sort of modern psychology. Approach. It's really interesting the more work being focused on the survival mode of being, which is necessary for our functioning, comes out of the amygdala, and this capacity for something beyond survival, thriving. I had one teacher put it very bluntly a long time ago. He said that there are really only two basic emotions, love and fear. And if something doesn't feel loving, you can pretty much trust you can trace it back to some form of fear. I will say that's the modern a modern psychology approach. The Buddha added, which was the 2,500 years ago modern psychology approach, or could be seen in that way, is also seen in so many, his teaching seen in so many other ways, but that's the way I'm relating at this moment. Added a third possibility that should never be forgotten, delusion. We just don't see clearly, and we don't know that we don't see. The innumerable times we make choices based on not knowing that we are deluded is stunningly striking once you start to get a handle on it. But this idea of love and fear, it's really, really, really helpful to look at the world and look at what's unfathomable to understand why people can behave in ways that they do, and consider this insight, two basic emotions, love and fear. How often are we humans capable of causing tremendous harm that at some level you can track back to someone caught up in a survival mode that is, I must survive and I don't care what I have to do, what the cost is to anyone else, because my survival is at stake. That's fear. And then to recognize, if you're talking about love and fear as two basic emotions, what happens to fear when we find some access, when we intentionally cultivate practices that allow us to find a foothold in the strength of the heart, a foothold in the idea of self-compassion, compassion for others, compassion for the world? How does that affect and change things for what we have available in any given moment? I've named this study from Kristen Neff a number of times, and I will continue to do so because I think it puts it into such stark, blunt terms. She is a researcher who was one of the earliest researchers in modern times to really highlight this relationship, and I'll put it this way, between self-compassion and our ability to function well and healthily at our best in the world. So one of her early studies looked at combat vets and PTSD. And what she found was, looking at, you know, the big question was, why do some military people get PTSD and some do not? What's the difference? What's going on? So she did this study looking at multiple factors. And what she found, considering multiple factors of who was getting PTSD and who wasn't in these vets that had experienced actual combat, was the number one predictor was, did the vet have some practice or way of understanding themselves that was self-compassionate? Did they have a sense of self-compassion for themselves in these situations? In light of that, they had some combat vets that had huge amount of combat exposure and never got PTSD. That self-compassion was protective. Some combat vets that had minimal exposure and went with no self-compassion or very little and went straight into PTSD. The connection between our ability to access the strength of the heart and our sense of internal safety is huge and can be researched and is shown again and again and again and again. And this makes sense if you think about how a baby learns to feel good in the world. The very first way that baby learns to feel good in the world is through safe connection. They can actually, you know, like put all those electrodes or prods or whatever on the mom's head and on the baby's head and watch what happens to the baby's brain. I mean, like literally see new parts of the brain learn how to feel like joy, happiness, love. With breastfeeding in the moment of the interaction. And there's all of the research around attachment. If the baby doesn't get that enough of a sense of safe attachment, that's the child that grows up deeply troubled again and again and again and again. Where mindfulness comes in is we can notice when our ability to feel a safe haven within our own being is troubled. We actually can cultivate and practice and learn and affect the neurology of the brain by practicing loving kindness, compassion, and getting closer in that direction. So that's kind of the modern take on it. And what's interesting is every spiritual tradition I know of already knew this before MRIs and research studies and all of this. I mean, this is not a news flash when you listen to what wise people have always been naming in the world. And so the place that I want to name it from is from the Buddha. The loving kindness I named Sharon Salzberg and her deep study of metta, loving kindness practice in Buddhist psychology. This dates back to stories from the Buddha. And so it is said that the first teaching from the Buddha on loving kindness came through response as an antidote to fear. The story is in those days, the monks were in India. India has the rainy season. So for 3 months during the rainy season every year, the monks would go out and find a place of their own to practice for the 3 months and then come back together and travel together. So a bunch of the monks in the story went to the forest and started to practice for this three-month period and found in the story that the forest was full of demons. So it was really scary. Very, very, very easy to imagine going into deep forest in those days with all of the wild animals and all of the whatever, you know, it meant to be on your own and practice in the forest, that it was really scary. So they went back to the Buddha and they said, oh, we can't do this. We can't study there. You got to send us somewhere else. We need something that's safer. And in the story, the Buddha said, no, safe haven is there. I will teach you how you can go and practice in the forest. And he taught them the practice of loving kindness. One of the traditional loving kindness phrases that's used is, may I be safe. That's a phrase, an expression of loving kindness. May I be safe. The way I actually learned it initially was through Sharon Salzberg. And the phrase that she taught was, may I be safe and protected from all inner and outer harm. I may have named this last week, I can't remember. When I first got that phrase, I thought, okay, what am I supposed to do with that? Is this supposed to be, I think I did name this, is this supposed to be like some magic talisman that's gonna, I can wave a wand and all conditions are gonna make sure I stay safe and protected from anything? And I actually really kind of struggled with loving kindness practice for a long time in my early practice. And it was a while before I found some footing and found a way that, oh, this is really, really helpful. So the way I understand that phrase, may I be safe and protected from all inner and outer harm, is number one, yes, a good wish. May I be safe and protected May we all, may you, may the world, just may we live in conditions that are safe. May that happen. It's worthwhile just to name that. And then knowing that it's not a magical wand and the world is the way it is, how do we understand that phrase in a way that transcends conditions? The conditions are as they are. May I be safe and protected from all inner and outer harm can be understood in so many ways, and here is one. May I be safe and protected from all inner harm? May I not harm myself? May I actually cultivate a relationship of not non-harm, of me against me? May I not tear myself up with judgment, with self-blame, with senses of unworthiness? May I not be disrespectful to myself? May we all learn this way of not tearing ourselves up. May we learn a way that we can be in safe relationship with ourselves. May I be safe and protected from all outer harm. May I know I am okay, even if I am in relationship with someone who is trying to tear me up, trying to tear me down. May I not take in that poison, that toxicity? May I feel safety? Know I am safe, no matter how else anyone else in the world behaves towards me. I think back to the example of Nelson Mandela. He must have had a powerful connection with his own sense of self-respect to not take in any of the poison thrown at him in an unsafe world. How do we cultivate that for ourselves? So I'm noticing time. My idea for practice didn't work again. I apologize, but I do have a whole set of inquiry practices that we will do next week, more around the safety. I think it is really helpful to pause first and really consider what does this phrase, and start with ourselves. I am purposely naming it, may I, again and again and again. It's really easy to bypass me, try to put it out in the world, but if I'm trying to put it out in the world and I don't have it here, what am I putting out in the world? It's on shaky ground. Build this foundation here, and then, or do both and. but that is what allows us to step out into the world in a different way. It is worth learning the time to care for this inner being so that this inner being is available for the work I want to do out there. And eventually the out there and the inner, it's all one. So I think I'm going to end with the discourse on goodwill. This is the sutta, the teaching from the Buddha that arose out of the monks asking, how do we practice in a fearful place? And he taught goodwill, kindness, compassion, and love. May all beings be filled with joy and peace. May all beings everywhere, the strong and the weak, the great and the small, the short and the long, the subtle and the gross. May all beings everywhere, seen and unseen, dwelling far off and nearby, being or waiting to become, may all be filled with lasting joy. Let no one deceive another. Let no one anywhere despise another. Let no one out of anger or resentment wish suffering on another. Just as a mother with her own life protects her child, her only child, from harm, so within yourself let grow a boundless love for all beings. Let your love flow outward through the universe to its height, its depth, its broad extent, limitless love without hatred or enmity. Then, as you stand or walk, sit or lie down, as long as you are awake, strive for this with a one-pointed mind. Your life will bring heaven on earth. May we all be safe. May we all be safe and protected from all inner and outer harm. May we be well. May we be as healthy and as strong as is possible for us. May we care for ourselves with joy and ease. May we be happy, peaceful, calm. May we know safety. May we be safe. May we be safe. May we be safe. Thank you.